Hey everybody, it's Mike. Welcome or welcome back to the Revision Church Podcast. While you're here, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Revision app, which is actually the best way to get access to new content and share it with friends. You can get the app by texting Revision app to 77977. Thanks for listening today. My hope is that this message will be helpful for you and would inspire you to take the next step on your faith journey. So have any of you guys ever heard the sound of a rubber chicken noisemaker? There are all kinds of YouTube channels where rubber chickens are singing classic rock songs or worship songs, and they're really funny to watch, but in real life, I promise you, these are one of the worst things that have ever been invented in the history of mankind. So we took our family on this vacation to Florida a couple weeks ago, and it was awesome. It was a blast, and they had our kids had some money from their grandparents to spend, and we were going to some cool places like SeaWorld where they could get some neat stuff, like a killer whale stuffed animal or something. But a couple days before SeaWorld, we were at the beach, and we found ourselves in one of those surf shops that has hundreds of overpriced trinkets, and my 7-year-old twins found rubber chickens. And they were instantly amazed. They just grabbed one in each hand and started just squeezing them. And it honestly sounded like someone was being murdered in the corner, just slowly tortured to death. Jenny came running over like, what is going on? Just chicken squeezing and going deaf. And the worst part was they were convinced that what they wanted to spend their money on was rubber chickens. And I tried to tell them, I think you could get a whole box of rubber chickens from Amazon for the price of one at this surf shop. But that didn't sell them. And then Jenny tried to tell him, you won't have money later to buy what you really want if you get a rubber chicken. And that didn't sell them. So finally we had to level with them and let them know, if you even barely squeeze a rubber chicken while we are driving in the van, we're going to have to throw it out the window. And that's littering and you'd be out of rubber chicken. So I don't think you can get these. And that convinced them. This one's from Amazon. But anyways, like, they're so loud and awful. And we drove away just laughing about how fickle kids are. How easily they get caught up in just having to have whatever is right in front of them in the moment, right? And to be fair, it's hard to have like a long-term perspective on life when you're 7. But the more I thought about it, the more I wondered how different than my twins I really am. I got a 3-decade head start on them, and yet I continually find myself in a spot where I'm willing to compromise on what I really want to get whatever's right in front of me. I got a whole drawer of t-shirts I've kept for a long time. I call my aspirational mediums. And I have these moments where I'm like, you know what? I would like to fit into those comfortably. But what I really want right now is a 4th slice of pizza. Or Jenny signed us up to run this 7-mile road race in July. My alarm goes off at 5 and the kids don't have school anymore. I think I'd like to run that race. But right now what I want is to go back to sleep. Or I have this life goal, I want to save more money so I can be more generous, that I can just be more open-handed for anyone who has need and anyone who asks. But every time I look at my driveway, I think, what I want right now is a new car because I'm sick of my little junk mobile. Does any of that sound familiar? You've been there? I think we all have, in situations big and small with like varying degrees of consequences. It is really difficult not to get caught up in the myopia of our moment. Just get tunnel vision on what's right here and right now and feel like we have to have it no matter what. And we live in the middle of a culture that reinforces that idea, that instant gratification is good no matter what the long-term consequences may be. We need whatever we want, whenever we want it, or we might be missing out. But what if that's not true? What if focusing our lives and our efforts on what's right in front of us rather than what's out ahead of us means trading a beautiful future for things that are fleeting and worthless? Honestly, you guys, I think most of our worst moments, most of the things we've done that we most desperately wish we could hop in a DeLorean with Doc Brown, go back in time and erase, happen because we forget who we are, who we were made to be, and run after something that looks like it might be fun for a minute. This morning, we're in week 3 of the series called Your Future Self, where we're trying to get a little bit of wisdom before we need it. So that when crisis happens, when challenges happen in our lives, and they will because we live in a shattered world full of messed up people, we will know how to respond wisely. And our future selves will thank us for that wisdom. And this morning I want to zone in on this daily, constant, regular temptation that we have to head in the direction of instant gratification instead of the direction of who God says we were made to be. So if you have a Bible or a Bible handy, you can crack it open to the book of Genesis, chapter 25. If you don't have one, no worries. You can follow along on the Revision app or with the words on the screen. And if you need a Bible or your kids need a Bible, please take one from the Next Steps table. They're free. We love it when they disappear. Or let us know on your digital connection card if you're watching online, and we will mail you one. But Genesis 25, this is a good one for Father's Day because there's a story of terrible parenting, sibling rivalry, and a whole lot of other messed up family dynamics. And ultimately, it's about a dude who got so caught up in what he wanted in an instant that he willingly sold his future for it. It's a guy named Esau, and he had his twin brother named Jacob. And before we even read it, I got to let you know, when we read this story, you're going to think, that guy is an idiot. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, what? I have no sympathy for him whatsoever. I would never do that. Let me be real with you. I think you would do that. I think I do that. I know I do that. I bet you've done it. I think most of us do the exact same thing that Esau did, and we do it all the time. Here's the story. It starts in verse 24. This is when the time came for her, this is Rebekah, to give birth. There were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. Real quick time out. Esau came out hairy. I don't know how many of you have ever seen birth, but it is gross. But how much grosser for a baby? He didn't grow hairy. He came out covered in red hair. Like, I read this, and all I can picture is a Chewbacca baby. Like, just... Anyways, Chewbacca, Esau, and Jacob, they grew up. They grew up, right? That happens. And then the boys grew up. Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Time out again. That's a jacked up family dynamic. Maybe some of you can relate. Dad loves the manly high achiever, and mom loves the gentle little brother. This is what's going on. This is what happens. It says, once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. This is why he was also called Edom. Jacob replied, first sell me your birthright. Look, I'm about to die, Esau said. What good is the birthright to me? But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank. Then he got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. Okay, we got to understand, this is one of the worst negotiations that ever happened in the history of mankind. It's unbelievably awful, and we don't know why. Maybe Esau did this bad negotiation because he was a moron. Maybe redheads are bad at negotiating. I don't know. I don't know if that's a thing we can know. But if you're here and you have red hair, I have a car I'd like to sell you. Never mind what I said about it earlier. It's like, it's roomier on the inside than it looks like on the outside. But for real, this was real bad. How bad? In the ancient Near Eastern world, the birthright was reserved for the eldest son. When a dad died, all of his money and possessions got split up amongst his sons, however many sons he had, and the oldest son got a double portion. And Isaac, Esau, and Jacob's dad, was one of the wealthiest dudes in the world. So Esau trading his birthright made that a real expensive bowl of soup. And there are a few things in this story I think we can learn. A few things our future selves can grab from Esau's mistake that we need to be aware of. And the first one is this. Beware of mistaking growth for maturity. Genesis tells us that these brothers grew up. They got bigger physically, but apparently they didn't get bigger mentally. Okay? And it's easy when we read this story to think of them as still kids, like they're fighting over this, or maybe teenagers, maybe preteens, like fighting over who's going to eat stew and who needs to trade somebody what sounds like something my seven-year-olds would fight with each other about right now. But check it out. When this story happened, they were in their 60s. Their 60s, that's older than most of you. That's older than some of your parents. And I think the people who are sitting in here today who are in their 60s or older would be like, when you're our age, you should know better. You should know better than that. Talk to your financial planner. He would tell you, don't do it. But like, Esau didn't know better. And here's why that's a big deal. We read in Genesis that he was skilled. He was gifted. He grew in what he did, but not in who he was. He worked a whole lot on his skills as a hunter, but far too little on his character as a man. He was able to get great at hunting his dinner. but he was terrible at controlling his appetite. See, growth doesn't equal maturity, and age doesn't equal wisdom. And beware of making that mistake of thinking just because you're growing or just because you're older, you're suddenly wiser. And please don't make the error of believing that all you need to do is get better at the things that you're good at. That all you need to do is lean in and develop the gifts and the abilities God's given you, because every single one of you has a unique set of gifts. But if all you do is lean into your gifts and you never develop your character, it will all come crashing down. Because I promise, every single one of us in this room will have moments, more of them than we could possibly imagine and so many more than we want, where we are vulnerable. And when you're vulnerable, your talent does not matter, only your character does. And if that part of you is missing or that part of you is deficient, you just might end up in the exact same place that Esau did, making a really, really bad trade. But if we're honest, or if you're anything like me, it's not hard to see how he got to that spot. Like, we know it was a bad deal, but I understand why. He was starving. I get it. He came in famished. He's like, I'm so hungry. I feel like I'm about to die. I gotta get some food. And he was really vulnerable because of his hunger. And he listened to his brother, Jacob, who was his brother but not his ally, his blood but not his friend. From the moment Jacob came out grabbing Esau's heel, he had been trying to usurp him. And mommy, who loved Jacob best, had been plotting right alongside him. And when you're vulnerable, it's dangerous to listen to the wrong voices. But he got real hungry. He got real hungry and he started listening to the wrong voices. He said, give me some of that stew. And Jacob said, give me your birthright. And he made the trade. But let's zoom out for a minute, right? Like, picture them in this tent, and they're fighting over this bowl of stew, and zoom out to the 64,000-foot level. We got Esau, this big, hairy, barren lion-killing, manly hunter. And you got little brother Jacob, who liked to hang out in the tent, cook some bean stew, maybe bake cookies for dessert. What should Esau have done? Punched his stupid little brother in the face and eaten the soup. Just shoved him out of the way and eaten. That was not beyond his capability. But he didn't do it. Why? Because he got caught up in the myopia of the moment, in his urgency, in his sense of like, what's right now? What do I need right now? He forgot who he was. He forgot his identity, and he turned into just a little drama queen, like, oh, I'm about to die. Just give it to me. Need it. Right? That's the second thing we got to learn. Second thing our future selves will thank us if we're on the lookout for. Beware of starving appetites that become stupid emotions. When we allow ourselves to get too hungry, we stop thinking clearly. I'll never forget my least favorite football game I ever played in. It had nothing to do with the final score. We almost always lost. So that was just, I was used to that. But it was the first game of my junior year. I had forgotten to bring a snack to school. I used to bring a fruit and some Fig Newtons, and I'd eat that between school and the game and then eat a big meal after. But that day, I didn't have a snack, and I'd forgotten to eat. I was at school late, so I'm driving from school to the game. It's 6 o'clock. I hadn't eaten since noon, so I stopped at the gas station across the street from the stadium and just ran in to grab a snack real quick because I was starving. But because I'd allowed myself to get too hungry, I didn't think, what do I normally eat? What would be healthy before I play a football game? Instead, I grabbed the first thing that looked good to me, which was a 20-ounce Mountain Dew and a bag of chocolate-covered mini donuts. I drove across the street, sat in the parking lot of the stadium, scarfed that entire thing down, went inside, and got dressed. And I will spare you all the literally barfy details, but I have never felt worse in my life playing a sport than I did sprinting down on the kickoff team after polishing off a bag of donuts and slamming a Mountain Dew. It's just like so, so bad. But I think life happens like that a lot. When we get to the point where we're starving, we stop thinking about what's healthy and we start consuming garbage. When we get too hungry, we just reach out for the first thing we think can fill us up. But too often, those little compromises don't work out very well. They leave us in a spot where we're still hungry or we're worse off than we were before. And so the lesson for us is we got to make sure that we don't end up in that spot Esau ended up in. We don't let ourselves get too hungry. And I'm not talking about physical hunger, though if you are physically hungry, a whole bag of Little Debbie's is not a good idea. Don't do it. Just take it from me. But like spiritually, I think a lot of the times when we sin, when we fail, when we turn our back on God, when we reject Him. A lot of the times when we make big mistakes and massive compromises, those don't come because deep down inside we are just rotten to the core. And they don't come because we're trying to wreck our lives. They come because we're empty and we haven't allowed ourselves to get full. They come because we got too hungry. And so we lost out on the big picture of life and got focused on whatever the world threw right in front of us that we thought could solve that hunger. Spiritually. In our souls. We do this all the time. We skip church for any number of reasons. Anything's a good enough excuse. We just skip it. We don't do house groups. We push God to the very back of our agendas. We don't make any time to connect with Him in prayer, any time to read His word, any time to worship Him. We don't create space to connect with our Creator who built us for connection with Him. And then we have this hole inside of us. We're like, why do I have this existential emptiness as a human being? Well, every human being has an existential emptiness. We have a God-shaped hole in us that can only be filled by God. But when God isn't in there, when we haven't allowed God to fill it, we start reaching out for whatever else we think might. Whatever the world's thrown in front of our faces, we get hungry for love and we forget that the love of God is immeasurably bigger than anything we could ask or imagine. Instead of being filled up with the love of God, we reach out for sex or for images on a screen to try and fill that hole. We get hungry for acceptance, and so we start reaching out for achievement in the boardroom or in the classroom to try and fill that hole. We get hungry for people to think that we're great, and so we reach out for cars or stuff or something else, and then that hole never quite gets filled, and we begin to believe that we can never actually get the real thing, and maybe we can never fill it, so we just got to keep chasing whatever's right in front of our face, whether it's sex or stuff or success or whatever the world throws our way, because that will maybe, just maybe for a little while, satiate that hunger inside of us. And it won't. It won't. And the truth is, I think every single one of us could think about times where we made an Esau-like trade, where we traded our character, where we traded our integrity, where we traded our future for a bowl full of nothing. And there may be some of you sitting here today still hoping that bowl will turn out to be worthwhile. Like, oh, I know. I'm stuck in this loop. I'm stuck in this habit. I keep feeding this hunger with the wrong stuff, but maybe, just maybe, it'll be okay. And the truth is, it ends for us the same way it ended for Isaac, or for Esau. He got up and left. That's the end of the story. It just ends right there. It says, Esau stood up and left. And I bet he walked out of that tent and thought, crap. Speaking of crap, where do you think those beans ended up? Right? I'm just saying, they're the musical fruit. This is the stuff I think about when I read the Bible. It's probably why it says he left in a hurry. That's what the original Hebrew, and Esau left in a hurry. I bet he did. But like, this is what this guy traded for. Right? And it's the same for us. We're going to leave in a hurry and it's going to end up being nothing. And that brings us to the third thing we got to be aware of. Be aware of the temptation to trade what you want the most for what you want in the moment. Be aware of the constant daily temptation to trade what you want the most for what you want in the moment. Esau did it. We do it too often, all of us. But we got to stop making that bad trade. Please do not give up your birthright for a bowl of soup. And some of you are thinking, my birthright? I'm not sure I have a birthright. My parents are not as wealthy as Isaac was. I don't know what you're talking about here, but you have a birthright. I promise you, you have a spiritual one. The Bible tells us very clearly, we have an inheritance that is kept for us that will never perish, spoil, or fade. It's reserved for us, and it is shielded by faith, and it's yours if you've put your faith in Jesus Christ. Would you just turn to the person next to you right now, tell them, you have a birthright. You have a birthright. You do. You were created in love by a God who made you for Himself and redeemed you at cost of His life. Ephesians 1, verses 13 and 14 tell us this. And you also were included in Christ when you heard the message of truth, the gospel of your salvation. When you believed, you were marked in Him with a seal, the promised Holy Spirit, who is a deposit guaranteeing our inheritance until the redemption of those who are God's possession to the praise of His glory. You have an inheritance. You have a promise. You have a birthright of peace, joy, hope, love, meaning, purpose, and a future. And I want you to know this morning, I want every one of us to walk out of here knowing that you know, nobody can take it from you. Nothing can take it from you. Not even this great enemy, the devil, can take it from you. That's not how it works. That is not in his power. He cannot do it. See, there are only three things that could happen with the birthright in ancient Near Eastern culture. It could be doubled. It could be given away like Esau gave it away, or it could be transferred. But it could never, ever be taken, not by anybody. And so the devil's only strategy in your life is not to take it because he can't. It's to convince you to give it up, to trade it for a bowl full of nothing that the world has thrown in front of you, saying that it would fill you. And my prayer is that we would stop allowing him to convince us to give up what is ours. You have a birthright. You have a promise. This promise of peace. But so often, like if you're anything like me, I have this promise of peace, but I get hungry for control, and so I give up peace for a bowl full of worry. I got a promise, an inheritance of joy, but so often I get hungry for stuff, and so I give it up for a bowl full of grumbling. You got a promise, you got an inheritance of a testimony, a story to tell for God's glory that creates a better future for everyone around you in the world. But so often we give it up for a bowl full of popularity, just trying to blend in with the crowd. You have an inheritance, you have a birthright, and please, please, please don't let anybody ever convince you to trade it for a cup of soup. It's so easy in life to get caught up chasing what's right in front of us rather than what's out ahead of us, to believe that what we want right now is what we want the most and to make that exchange. It's easy in life to live like seven-year-olds in a surf shop. But for real, walk away from the chicken, okay? Just hashtag that on social media. Walk away from, this is not what you want. I know it looks fun. I know it makes a neat noise. Listen, but God has something better for you than that. Get rid of it. You don't want that. There's more. And I promise you there's more. And if you're sitting here today thinking, not for me, I messed it up. Whatever dreams God might have had for me, whatever purpose God might have had for me, I threw it away. I've traded for too many bowls of soup. My birthright is gone. And it's my fault. If you believe that, don't believe it for one second. Remember this Father's Day that God is a good Father and his grace is endless. It knows no boundaries whatsoever. So if you're not dead, you're not done. You got a heartbeat. You got air coming through your nostrils. God is not through with you yet. And you have a birthright even though you've done all the things you've done still. And you're asking, how? How could that possibly be true for me? If you only knew my story, how? Because Jesus didn't take the bowl of soup. Jesus didn't make that trade, and he is the firstborn son. He's the firstborn son of God who earned the inheritance at the price of his life, and he can transfer it. It's his to give, and he wants to give it to you. All you got to do is believe, and if you never have, today you can. It's that simple. Because we go, just remember, all of us are hungry. We're hungry for something, and there are plenty of things that the world is going to keep throwing our way that promise us that they will be enough, but they are not enough. The truth is that hope, life, joy, purpose, and meaning are found. True fullness is found when we walk away from the chicken, when we refuse to trade for the bowl of soup, and we connect with the Creator who made us for himself. Will you guys pray with me? God, thanks for being a good Father. Thanks for not giving up on us while we were running away from you. Thanks for keeping this inheritance for us. An inheritance of love and joy and peace and hope and eternal life. Thank you for everything you gave to make that our reality. God, today we're all going to walk back out into a world full of temptation, full of things that will be right in front of us that will seem like what we want. God, help us to be a people who don't mortgage what we want in the moment instead of chasing after what we want the most, who don't get so hungry that we accept the things the world gives us instead of filling ourselves on you and your love. Thank you for being a good, good Father. And thank you for walking with us every step of the way. Praise in Jesus' name. Amen.